Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This year's my conversation in the Franklin Public Radio studios with Frank Falvey of Frank Presents, a longtime Franklin resident and cable show host. This is the first of a series on the town charter that he and I will do together, the process to change it, and some of the possible revisions are what Frank and I will discuss. Links to the town charter, modified most recently in 2013, and the charter report for 1995, and other associated docs are included in the show notes. Our recording runs about 34 minutes, so let's listen to the conversation Frank and I have about charter. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters.
And Frank Falvey is here.
For Frank's Presents. You've been here for how long?
I've been in Franklin since 1964. I've been here since they had town meetings, that you actually went to a meeting.
Yes.
So I've been here through a number of different charter or governmental changes. Yes, since 1984, I've had a TV program, and it all started when my daughters were in the 6th and 7th grade, and I had this great video camera, and I along with a lot of other people, were videotaping the musical performances.
Sure.
And then one day it dawned on me, why not air it?
Yep.
So I brought it down to the cable, and lo and behold, I became a member of the cable committee, and lo and behold, music was on the air. But we're here today to talk about Franklin Charter and the way we're governed here in the town of Franklin.
Absolutely. And I'm a youngster in way in comparison to the Franklin experience. For the listeners' ability, if they hadn't heard us or me specifically before, we came into Franklin in 95. And then somewhat similar, as my girls, young ladies now, were graduating from high school, I started figuring out what was going on with the budget. How come things, I'd go to a meeting and try to figure out what's going on. It'd be a 2 or 3 hour meeting. The Milford Daily News respectfully would post the next morning an article. And then, well, and that was also in the days when they did post an article after the meeting. That was a 5 minute conversation. Where's the rest of the meeting?
Right.
And Franklin Matters was thereby nascent and starting to, I started figuring out how I could do this. Podcasting was brand new. Blogging was brand new. I went to a conference in Boston, which was free. So it's like, okay, I can go there. Oh, I know how to do this. And since 2007, so we're in November. In November of 2007, after the town election, franklinmatters.org was officially born. And I'm happy to celebrate my anniversary this month and today.
This month.
In this session with you, we're talking town charter. So.
And we're talking another anniversary because I forget which year now, but maybe 6 or 7 years ago, Frank's music program began in this studio with Jim Derrick.
Absolutely.
And now it's expanded to Frank and Jim's Derrick's Music to Lift the Spirit.
Correct.
In this studio.
Yep. And then Jim's also branched off with Todd Monger, and they do Talkin' the Blues. So from one show, it's spawned into three.
And actually, Jim's first show was, I think, Chapters.
His first show, podcast, then became a podcast, was Chapters.
Chapters.
Yep.
So this cable experiment of bringing cable into the home has grown by leaps and bounds in technology, and we have a wonderful resource, not only with the cable TV,
right,
which is on Verizon and Comcast, but it's now on WFPR 102.9 FM on the radio.
Correct. And it's also, for those who don't have Comcast or Verizon, the meetings and the shows are also available via live stream. So you can go to an internet browser, go to franklin.tv, And you can live stream the shows that are playing via Comcast and Verizon. So if you've cut your cable cord, theoretically, that's kind of the term these days, you can still watch us.
And you can also hear past shows if you go to WFPR.FM, and you can hear all of the past shows, including Making a More Perfect Union, which I highly recommend.
Yes. Yeah, and the only shows that are not yet into the past shows are kind of the music ones, because we still have this licensing thing that the FCC and others are kind of want some money, and we haven't figured out how to logistically and economically do that yet, but there's hope.
And for those that are cutting, what do you call it, the cable?
Cutting cord.
I'd like to bring to your attention that this radio, this TV station, is operated only and funded only by the contributions that are assessed as part of a cable bill. There is actually a 5% charge on your cable portion of your bill, and that funding goes to the town of Franklin, which then enters into a contract with this nonprofit cable organization. So when you cut your cable bill, you're actually kind of, in a sense, not endangering, but you're reducing the revenue that could be possibly used to bring all this technology and better programming to your home.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good point. And quarterly, the town council goes through that procedural action of approving the money that came in from Comcast and Verizon to be transferred to Franklin Cable via a bylaw vote, or a vote officially each quarter. There was also, and we'll include in the show notes for those listening, there was also a presentation at one point. I'm losing the time. You know, COVID, post-COVID, kind of lose exactly when things occurred. But Pete Fasciano gave a wonderful presentation, overview, and how many hours of programming that are produced by the cable operations, by the TV studio, clearly all the town meetings, school committee meetings, etc. A lot of the sports events are all produced and aired, especially during the COVID and post-pandemic period, via live stream, etc. So parents who could not go into the gym to watch could at least view the live stream event of their kids performing. All of that is funded through that. So yeah, at some point in time, Franklin TV will need to look for additional sources of revenue, but right now we're living within the budget.
But not only can they view it, but the part of the cable proceeds actually goes to the schools to help fund basically a lot of equipment in the video area. So there is a significant amount that we have particularly given to the high school for their, they have a whole curriculum around media.
Correct.
And around that type of presentation that a lot of the funding came from the access revenue.
Yep. Yeah, while we're at it, when the high school, the new high school was being built, the fitting out of the Panther TV studios was done with a considerable contribution from cable operations. Yes.
Correct.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that much said, certainly we'll have in the show notes the Franklin TV, Franklin WFPR, public radio, but we're getting to Charter. How the town government does its business. And the background on that, clearly, for those who have been aware and did listen, when we had a recent election, November 2nd, 2021, which was also the first simultaneous video and audio broadcast, which we both were participants of.
We both were. We both were participants for the second time. Of a local election. We did interviews. We did a lot of leading up to the election. We both did a lot of interviews with the candidates. There were two separate candidates nights. And the charter of Franklin, if I can step back just a moment.
Sure.
Where did Franklin come from? Well, back in the colonial days, Franklin came from Wrentham, the land in the town of Franklin. Apparently, there were two residents that started the ball rolling, and because of a church. When it was too difficult for the Franklin people to go to Wrentham to go to the Congregational Church, then they petitioned to have their own church here in Franklin. And that, in essence, led to another parish or an area now called the town of Franklin, which did take state approval. And their Franklin is governed by a lot of state laws, but the operation of the town of Franklin is governed now by what's called a home rule charter.
Correct.
And Steve, there was a wonderful article that you pointed out about two ways of how home rule charters now can be changed.
Yeah, there are. And it goes back to certainly the Mass Constitution, which was one of the first constitutions in the nascent U.S. at the time.
And that's why we're called a Commonwealth, because of John Adams, the second president of the United States, basically wrote the Constitution of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. And the Mass Constitution provides for home rule. So they provided, and the prescriptions are still there. I think it's chapter 34 governs home rule charter and the process. And yes, there are two ways to do it. So with our current charter, for example, if you've got a minor technical change, you can have a committee or a subgroup or however propose to, and in some cases, it would be the Board of Selectmen. In Franklin's case, it would be the town council. Town council would then have to approve, along with, you know, town manager, et cetera, or town administrator in this case. And then it would go as a special act of legislation that would have to be approved by both House and Senate, and then the governor sign off. That's probably the shorter way, but still would take time. The longer way, and the way that had been used at least twice that I know of so far in Franklin, was in 1995 and then again in about 2010 when the report came out, is what they call a charter commission, which a minimum number of voters would have to approve to initiate the operation. The actual members of the charter commission would be voted on by the population. And then they would have 18 to 24 months. I think actually they have to produce a report within 18 months as to what the proposed changes would be, upon which then after town council approval, et cetera, the voters would still get to yay or nay on what those proposed changes would be.
Yes. And I think it's important to point out that part of the charter question, the first question is, do you want a charter committee, a commission?
Yes.
And then the second question is, who do you want on that committee that the voters need to vote? That is an extremely, extremely important decision. You need to know what agendas the people are running for to be on that committee that they have. I mean, is there an agenda to reduce the number of town councilors? Or are the people really have a fairly open mind to what changes may happen? But that selection of that committee, I can't tell you, is so critical.
Yeah, and from what I've rereading the charter, and certainly I've been getting a little bit more education in that space, and the rereading of the Mass General laws and the process, a charter candidate, so somebody who wants to be part of that commission, has to come up with 50 signatures, akin to, I believe, school committee has 50, town council today 100, to become, you know, a candidate for one of those positions. So it's similar. But then, to your point, yes, there would be the two questions on the initial ballot. Do we want a charter commission? And then select a minimum of 9. So there may be 10, 20, however many candidates select. And then to your point, we need to pick the right 9 who would then sit down at the table to lead us as a community through the process, public meetings, hearings, whatever, to come up with what would be the possibilities, what things should we, could we change, what should they look like, ultimately then goes through the approval process coming back to the voters to say, yay, verily, this is the change, we do approve this, we don't approve that, et cetera.
This is where we need the residents and voters of Franklin to have some degree of education in government, in how government works. You can maybe live in different parts of the country, and a county government is the type of government that you need to be most familiar with. Here in Massachusetts, when you're living in a community, you really need to educate yourself in how the theory of governing yourself as a town operates. What scares me is there are too many individuals that will sign up to be on this committee, like even people running for town committee or school committee, that really do not have a background or an understanding of what democracy entails. I mean, I go back here in Franklin in 1964 to go to a town meeting, and I can remember there was something at the end of the town meeting that I particularly did not want to see passed. I call for a quorum call, right? Because there are less than 50 people really concerned, and I've always felt that a town meeting is the best form of, an actual town meeting is the best form of pure democracy.
Pure democracy.
But what happens is, people are afraid to go and actually vote on things that are going to affect them. They don't want to be there. They want to leave it to someone else, which is not what local democracy is all about. You need to be familiar not only with the question or the ballot questions, but the personalities. And one of the things you and I mentioned at the last election, I think it's time for us to move to a point that we need to put R or D or W. I mean, there's really, I think, 7 or 8 different parties in Massachusetts.
Officially registered
that you can go down to the town clerk and be a registered member. And one of the things that in the past, Franklin had a very smaller population. The population was much smaller. And if you go back even to colonial days or even the 1930s, this was an Italian town. A lot of the people came from Italy. It was problematically very democratic. And I can see at that time that people really knew personally or knew the character of people that were running for public office. And so it made a lot of sense not to have an R or a D on the ballot because it was heavily democratic, and you knew more people. Today, I think this last election changed that paradigm. And what we have now are people with an R next to their name that may be against certain things out of principle because they're a Republican. They may not want the stormwater drained because they see it as a tax or a fee or not environmentally needed. You have Democrats maybe that don't understand how we give money to the school committee, and they just hear Franklin is way down on the percentage of money coming from the town going to the school committee without understanding how that formula is made and what the components are. So I think we need to put an R or a D or a W or whatever the party symbol is, because many people go to the election, they see the ballot, and they have no idea, somewhat, of who they're voting for unless they know the person. And so they're making choices. This is a critical piece of information, in my belief, for them to see that. And in order for that to happen, the charter needs to be changed, because in the charter it says, it actually says, this shall be a non-partisan election with no indication of party, not only a D or an R, but even a symbol. You can't have a party symbol on it.
It's a healthy discussion item, and we're putting aside some of the other, if you will, arguments for the case. I'll focus specifically on the partisan versus nonpartisan aspect of it, because that's really where the discussion is at this point. We could certainly spend hours on the other pieces. But I think the charter was designed, and clearly the charter, as we've also started discussing, is... it has an involved process so that we can make a true and informed decision over a period of time so that we just don't jump and find ourselves, oops, we probably shouldn't have done that. There's a process that we go through. So once upon a time, nonpartisan, and I think today, nonpartisan truly should remain. I fear that particularly in the current environment and potentially going forward, particularly with the social media aspects of things, we're getting too divided. It's such a divisive conversation. People will stop talking if they find out you're one party or another. Excuse me. No, we're neighbors. There may be an R or a D depending upon how you're registered, but how you vote in the details, that's private. That doesn't matter. Nobody gets that public info. Yes, we do find out how many Republicans, Democrats, Green Party, Libertarians, et cetera, vote. That's public record. That level of it is public record. But I think the real issue, to your point, in terms of people not being aware, we have a bigger issue in terms of just local participation. So even going back to the town meetings, when you would get to the point where some people had left, so you had to call a quorum to see if you had enough people still discussing it, we have a problem where there's less than 20% on average that are coming out to a local election. And hopefully those are indeed taking the opportunity to go to the election because they have done the research to figure out Tom, Dick, or Harry, or Sue, or Billy, or whatever, who they're going to vote for, as opposed to just walking in, well, I know one person, I'll just guess on the others, right? So nonpartisan, I think, should remain, because I don't think party politics at a local level matters. I think we're neighbors first. We need to build that sense of commonwealth, back to our original points in the discussion. We are the Commonwealth of Mass. We need to have our common understanding. We have to help each other get through whatever, whether it's the pandemic or get through budget seasons or get through storms and other things. How do we want to operate? Now, coincidentally, Franklin is coming up on 2028, which you may recall, since the charter was signed and deeded, incorporated back on March 4, 1778. It's going to be our 250th anniversary. In 2028. What does Franklin really want to be in 2028? How do we want to operate? Hopefully by that point, we'll have operated on a much more civil discussion level. At least that's my hope, and that's what I've been working towards. And I certainly thank you for having this conversation, because we're at least maintaining civility in this glorious studio while we're at it, and having a conversation around some serious topics.
Yeah, it is a basic political serious topic, and my point is that the population now is so large and so concentrated on digital media. Is that what we call
digital
it today?
Media would be one aspect of that, certainly. Yeah,
that the print media is, mm-hmm. in all practicality,
declining. Yep.
And so the social media is it misinforming or not even doing much, in fact, on a local level. And so that the individual, the little pieces that they can learn, the D and the R, really point out what that person's political theory or philosophy is, which carries over into how they're going to vote on local issues. In other words, if there's a D next to the name and they're running for town council, very likely, and they have children in school, very likely they're going to want to see more money going to the school department, and the only reason that they're running is just one issue. And now they're on the town council, and there's a whole bunch of issues, and basically they're going to follow what their political belief is and how they're going to vote on issues they never even thought that they would be voting on. I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah. No, and thanks for the throwback, because I'll reiterate at least in another way. And I, as a registered Democrat, would hate to be pigeonholed with all Democratic proposals, because I'm clearly not for all Democratic proposals. And as you're well aware, within no matter whichever platform, whether it's Democratic, Libertarian, there are things across the spectrum, if you will, in terms of far right, far left, center. There are things across the spectrum. I don't necessarily abide to all of those. And I fear that if we're going to continue to foster that division, we're just going to continue to go down that division road, as opposed to I'd rather step back. I'd rather try to get more to the common road and then work on what's the real issue. How do we get to know who those candidates are? How do we get behind the understanding of, oh, Tom's for this, Sue's for this, and foster that they be more than one issue candidates? That in itself is a separate piece. I'd put that aside for the moment. But we need to get more into the common goal. What is that? I think the town can do more of that in some forums, which, you know, clearly I'll continue to foster in the discussion on.
Well, the largest number of people that are registered in Franklin as independents. I mentioned earlier that...
Unenrolled?
Unenrolled.
Yeah.
Unenrolled.
Which is also one of the unique things about Massachusetts in general, because you can, when you go to a party primary, you have to declare to take a ballot for a Republican or Democrat. But then once you voted, you can have automatically your status revert to unenroll. That in itself, I think, is an interesting aspect, one of Massachusetts. But two, people don't want to be pigeonholed, because your party status then leads you to the communications and the mailings from each of the parties. And if you don't want that, you just stay unenrolled and you don't get any mailings, theoretically.
But doesn't that go to my argument that unenrolled tells you a lot about the candidate if they are unenrolled? They're not choosing a political party. Okay,
Is the nonpartisan proposal that we'd probably operate under.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if unenrolled appeared as next to the name, then you know they're not affiliated directly with a political party.
Mm-hmm.
And so that says, to me, that says a lot that their mind might be open. And as a Democrat, I'm very dissatisfied with a lot of things that are happening mm-hmm. in the Democratic era. I'm extremely dissatisfied with things that are happening on the Republican party. And yet both of them, there's things I like that they're advocating on both of them. So mm-hmm. yes, there are things that you need to understand where the person coming from. In this last political election for the town, though, we had came out of nowhere or somewhere a group of people that got together, not a political parties, not the Republican political party, a non-political party that came out and endorsed basically the candidates that won.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did have a mailing and an emphasis, at least to people that vote, as who you should vote for, without a lot of description of where they stand.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was interesting, too, because the group that you speak of is the Franklin United Municipal Public Action Committee, or Political Action Committee. So they are a registered PAC with the state to do some fundraising. They came together and deliberately what their name is. So it's Franklin United Municipal, or Franklin Municipal United. I forget exactly how it goes. But that's the point. Franklin United is their short piece. And they got together as a group of concerned citizens because there were some candidates that they identified that were certainly espousing some values that, to a certain extent, I would also wonder whether they would have agreeing to the swearing-in ceremony, because swearing-in says you're abiding by the laws of the U.S., Commonwealth of Mass, and the town bylaws of Franklin. And yet some of the things that they were looking for were truly against some of those. So, you know, kudos to the Franklin United. They at least stepped up, followed the process, and in a nonpartisan way said these are the candidates that speak to Franklin United, which at least fosters the Commonwealth concept that I had. So, yeah, I will also admit, without getting into great details, I didn't follow exactly every single person that they recommended. I had my own choices. But certainly for some people who were trying to make a choice, that may have been a good deal for them to at least consider. I'll go further and say that they at least elucidated why they chose those candidates. There was another...
Not in the mailing.
Not in the mailing, no, because clearly it's just one mailing. You don't have all that. If you followed the link to the website, you could get all the details. Yeah. Which then goes back to speak to the digital versus paper world where we're in, where in the digital world, you don't necessarily get all the details unless you go to the webpage.
Which goes back to the fact that because this is a nonpartisan election, both the Democratic and Republican town committees, as such, did not play that much of an active role.
No. And in a nonpartisan election, they're not supposed to.
Right. And so by designating a political party, then they could play a more partisan role. And I think anything that would spur individuals to go vote would be good. And I think the political parties, which in Franklin are near about somewhat even as far as... No?
No.
Is it still very heavily Democratic?
Based on what I've heard, the Republican Town Committee ballot has struggled to get the requisite numbers of Republican candidates. I haven't been able to attest to that specifically, but that's what I've heard.
Looking at the homes that are being built in Franklin and the prices, it seems to me we have got to have a lot more Republicans moving into Franklin than any other place.
Well, that assumes the Republicans are the ones that are coming in with money.
Right.
So this, is, I think, has been a good start to a discussion on charter. And this is effectively one aspect of, and I've got a wish list of two or three others. So I would tease up, and if you're willing, we can tease to the viewers that stay tuned for part two. This is at least part one.
I would encourage people because we love, both of us love to talk about good things happening for Franklin and how we make them happen. And we're not particularly saying that everything that we say is absolutely has to happen. We're discussing the issues, trying to inform you of the things that you should think about and look at when you're considering the particular issue of having a nonpartisan or a partisan election.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, yes, I look forward to having more conversations.
Yes. So in the show notes as we wrap, we'll include links to certainly the current charter, the prior charter. If you want to provide feedback, info@franklin.tv is certainly an email to use. My information is available on franklinmatters.org. And we encourage you to stay tuned for part two on our discussion of the charter. How long this series will go will depend upon how quickly we can work through all these different topics.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.